Morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. It's a Monday of the 8th of June, 2026. Good morning. How are you doing? Where are you? And what is the Monday has for you? And are you awake this time, or you are still fighting with your blanket? You know, understand that, you know, there is no time. There is no time to waste. There is a lot of things that which is happening around the world, and you cannot be sleeping this time, because you are not only betraying the struggle of economic emancipation, you are not doing justice for yourself and also for your future self. Yeah, like any other Monday, we give you latest updates on what has been happening in the weekend, what is happening now, and also what is happening in Namibia, in the SADC region, in the continent of Africa, and indeed what is happening around the world. And from there, from the hour of 7, we will look at the topic for today. We will look at the conversation for today, what we have on the table. And after that, then we'll be able to give you what is in the Villager newspaper, what is in the Villager newspaper when it comes to the content of economic affairs. And today from the hour 7 there, we'll be speaking and ask a question, especially why, you know, media is invited only when there is a launch of strategic plans of institutions. But when it comes to the review of those strategic plans, when it comes to the reviews of what have happened, you know, they are not invited. And today we'll be speaking about the issue of, you know, accountability, particularly to those, to corporate strategists and also organizational planners, those who are very good at drafting and showing to the public what they are going to do. But after 5 years, they just continue with, you know, another strategic plan. But why can't you invite also scrutiny during internal strategic review? Because, you know, if that does not happen, or if that is not, you know, emphasized or, you know, underscored, then there will be no difference between a strategic plan and a political manifesto, because it's rare for citizens to come after 4 or 5 years to come and sit with their candidate or their politician that won, either is a constituency, either is, you know, local authority, even, you know, presidency, to say, let us sit, let us look at the previous manifesto, let us do the review. What have you achieved? What have you said you are going to achieve? What are the shortcomings? And if that does not happen, especially with institutional strategic plan, there will be no difference between a campaigning tool than a tool that was supposed to drive the organization, the institution, somewhere far, and supposed to bear the results that, you know, results that, you know, are intended. But yeah, let us start with what is happening in international platform, especially between Iran and also Israel. Stated that you know, Iran has exchanged threats with Israel, but what is stated that Iran has launched missiles toward Israel in response to you know, in response to Israel striking Beirut, and you know, intention of attacking and also continuation of attacking Lebanon. But in the meantime, when Iran launched missiles over Israel, it is stated that the President of United States of America, Donald Trump, has warned Benjamin Netanyahu and his leadership not to respond to Iran missiles. And that is an indication, not an indication of timid, but it's an indication of a U.S. not willingness to continue fighting, because we know what war has caused. We know the devastating impact of that war. And those who understand the business understand that it's not going to be profitable. And it's also not going to be good, especially when it comes to the United States of America. But it's stated that, you know, on that ground, Netanyahu has also accepted not to continue, you know, fighting, especially looking at what have happened. You know, in the weekend, and know that the peace between between Iran, Israel, and also USA, it's a fragile peace. And although there is attempt to negotiate, you know that there is a world of uncertainty. It's a world of uncertainty. That's why. Even indicating to you at a personal level to say, sometimes you must embrace uncertainty because things will not always go the way you want them to go. When things don't go the way you want them to go, are you going to shout? Are you going to complain? Or you are going to change the gear? Because that is what's happening. You don't know the future of oil price. You don't know the future of energy price due to the fact that the Middle East is still not in peace. And it's those who are oil exporters that are going to benefit in this regard. And oil importers, like Namibia, we are already warned by African Development Bank that if it is extended to 6 months, the pressure will be felt. But that is what is happening, especially looking at the Middle East. And no, I know that the other good news, you know that the World Cup, amid all the crisis, what put human beings together, will start on Thursday. World Cup will start on Thursday. Particularly, people are thinking to say it's going to be a repeating of history when Mexico or Mexico and South Africa will start the World Cup. Yes, you know, it happened in 2010, it was the best World Cup. Not only because it happened in Africa, it was the best World Cup. First goal, first African home ground goal. Sifiwe Tshabalala. And people will not forget that history. And when those melodies of Shakira's, you know, songs. Let's come back short three.
Warm up with Red Hot Deals at WB. Get 5 kg Best Choice White or Light Brown Sugar for $92.99. 4 kg Cadilla Mixed Chicken Portions for only $194.99. A 250 gram Nestle Hot Chocolate Pouch for $49.99. And 1 liter Clover Ultra UHT Milk for just $21.99. See more month-end specials at Furmanbrock.com.
Yeah, we are moving forward. We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop, and looking ahead, as I indicated, that World Cup is starting. World Cup is starting on the 11th of June. That is Thursday. Especially between South Africa and Mexico. And also know that Iran is also at the World Cup. And is Iran going to meet with his rivals? And is it going to be a personal battle? Or is it going to be just pure football? It's time for excitement. And, you know, we must let the children to watch a World Cup because they should continue to aspire to play football. And also to aspire to play at an international platform. And the question that every Namibia should ask himself is that, particularly those who are in the fraternity of sport, is that when is Namibia dream going to come true? Even to have steps, just one footstep, or just one game at the World Cup. We are just looking at people enjoying global cake or participating in a global football. But we are just there as supporters of even countries that we have never traveled to. Imagine if the World Cup was even at our neighbor, to our neighbor just here in South Africa 2010, but we did not qualify. We never qualified in history of World Cup. Maybe we are going to qualify. And that should only start if we find ourselves maybe at one point at the final of maybe COSAFA. I mean, you know, African Cup of Nation, because we only won COSAFA. And so far as we are speaking, it seems like the Brave Gladiators are the one which are fit. But women football seems like it's the one which is dominating in Namibia, especially when it comes to look at, you know, our competitiveness in Southern Africa, and our competitiveness also in Africa. But the question is that, what are we good at? What are we known for? Particularly when it's come to the world of sport. And looking at the squad that's going to represent Namibia at the Commonwealth, maybe Paralympic, maybe Ananias Chikongo will be the one who give us. When it comes to boxing, we are still yet grooming. We are still yet grooming the likes of Mukungu. They still have to come out of their shell and fight. But the question that we should ask ourselves is that when it comes to sport, where are we standing? What are we known for? Can we go to a competition and they say this category is for Namibia, the same way they say this category is for Kenya, when they go for marathon, and when they go for sprinting, they can say this category is for Argentina, and when they go for boxing, they say no, this category is for Mexico, or it's for USA. When they go for football, they can say no, don't touch this one, it's Argentina's. But when it comes to Namibia, what are we known for? And you know, it's a critical question that we should ask ourselves. And also to look at our infrastructure too. To what extent our infrastructure being upgraded so that we can be able not only to play within those infrastructure, but also to bring about hope to groom, you know, world champions. But if we are going the way we are going, it's going to be a very long journey. And it's unpromising if there are no practical results, and we'll continue just to watch from far. Yeah, moving ahead. Seems like construction in Libya. You look at Libya, it seems like when it comes to Libya, there are projects of reconstructing. Their project of reconstructing, especially, buildings that were hit by catastrophic storm throughout eastern Libya, especially after 3 years. And that, of course, the death of around 4,000 people. Seems like, you know, after 3 years, after a devastating storm that happened in 2023, seems like, new roads are being built, and it seems like also new bridges, and also thousands of new homes are coming, have risen from rubbles since, 2023. Because Libya, it's not the case of Gaddafi, but it's also, if you are attracting negativity, or if you are used to problems, even Mother Nature get angry. That's why when you see countries that, are always at war, there's a high chance that you also find a natural disaster there. High chance that you also find the pandemic there. Look at what has been happening with Mozambique. After terrorist attack, you find the devastating wind. You find after devastating wind, you find flood. And look at DRC. Where they saw, it's also, I don't know if it's bad luck, but there is always possibility of natural disaster. Say that is drought. Or you can also find the pandemic. You get the DRC. After fighting rebels, then you're having malaria. After malaria, you have severe HIV. After severe HIV, then you have Ebola. Ebola after Ebola. Then you do not understand. That is also what happened with Libya. After 2011, Libya did not come in order. Even until now, understand that since 2011, Libya just this year tried to have a unified budget. You know that the country is divided into pieces. Military general on this side, prime minister on this side. And, you know, you do not know what the future is looking like, but it seems like there is construction going on. There is construction going on, especially to rebuild trust and also, you know, to take, you know, history into the past and look ahead, because what is necessary is the future. It's not about how many rockets you are firing. It's not about how many people were injured, but what is necessary is the future. Even up to you. If a country such as Libya is able to find its way forward, regardless of it being divided, who are you to continually blaming people instead of you looking ahead? Because the future is what is necessary. The bigger picture is what is necessary. Who knows? Maybe they will rebuild themselves to the extent of being a developed country. Because after a devastating situation, countries find purpose. Look at Rwanda. Look at how Rwanda is. At one point, Rwanda did not have direction. At one point, did not even have a president. At one point, did not even have a leader or a direction. There was what was called the state of nature. The war of all against all. That was 1993-1994. When citizens were killing each other with pangas due to a tribal war. Husband killing wives, wives killing cousins due to, you know, tribal. If you are a Hutu, you know, moderate. If you are a Tutsi, you are a Hutu or Tutsi moderate. It was a war. But where is the country now? It's not only continentally competitive, but it's also globally attractive. But that is what happened. Especially after, you know, devastating history, people always find purpose. Look at Namibia too. After a devastating history of genocide and war, look at where we are. We are not all bad news. We are also, at some point, a force to reckon with. Although there is a lot of things that we need to work out, but you need to look at you know, people that share common pain. They are most likely to rebuild and also work together. Let us look at a short commercial break, then continue with Every Morning Scoop. Understand that, like any other day, we are here until the hour of 8. And also, you must be able to know that we have the Villager newspaper today. And the conversation for today after the hour of 7. We'll be looking at the relationship between presenting a strategic plan to the public and reviewing it internally. And what is the necessity of holding corporate strategists accountable and comparing Namibia institutional strategic plans with political manifestos to say, can you really come back to the public? You speak about institutions. Can you really come back to the public to say, this is what we have said. This is what we have done. Because there was an argument at the beginning of this year. And BON said, last year they have reached around 98% of their strategic objectives. Then you're asking yourself a question, and there was a critical question that was asked to say, if you are saying you reach almost 100% of your strategic objectives, why Namibian economy is moving this side, or there is no link, even if there is no direct link between what you want to do and also the economy of the country? But we need to look into that aspect to say, can an organization, can an SOE say that it reached 70% or 80% of its strategic objectives? Why it is the chairperson who resigned or the CEO who is fired and a lot of criticism, and also a lot of incomplete projects. Or how can we link what is planned to what is seen? And this should not only happen to SOEs, even to institution of the state, to say, can we also present our review in public so that you can be held accountable, so that you can go back to the words that you have said. If you said you are going to reach 80% of the performance output and you only reach 6%, what have happened? Because it's one thing to celebrate a document, but it's more important, it's more crucial to celebrate, you know, impact. Because if we only celebrate the launching, the groundbreaking, then we don't see the final conclusion of that project. We don't see the final conclusion of implementation of that strategic plan. Then we are not only lying to ourselves, we are doing injustice to ourselves, because we are still in fantasy. Because fantasy is being happy of things that you cannot prove reality about. And, you know, at the end of the day, you are happy for nothing. And the world of fantasy should not be, you know, the world that we are living in. We need to live in the reality so that we can be able to move forward. So let's come back shortly. And you can still engage us at 083-288-401-083-288-401. As I indicated, this is a morning conversational program. And we are here to educate one another and also to see how we can bring this week to the conclusion and focus on the bigger picture, focus on the future. Because we were just in 2025, we're just celebrating 2025, the inauguration of our president. And now, know that we are in mid-year, and by the time you are awake, you are in 2027. And that will only give you 2 years before 2030. But understand that life is not ending in 2030. We are not here until 2030 only. There is a bigger picture. There is 2063. There is 2070. Then there is also a generation to come. Because what we do and what you do, if you are only thinking about yourself, you still have to think, because other people lived for you. Build foundation so that you can stand on. And that is exactly what you should also aspire. Apart from personal fulfillment, you also need to look at the aspect of what you are going to live by after, you know, you have done with your project. So let's come back shortly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi. Dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Chombe. And looking at the continent of Africa, continue looking at Libya. It is stated that hundreds of people in Libya, they are protesting against illegal migrants and refugees in Libya. Especially looking at what has been happening. And this is not only, in Libya. It's also something that is happening in South Africa. They stated that hundreds of Libyans gathered outside United Nations Refugee Agency headquarters in Tripoli and protesting against illegal migrants and refugees who they are indicating that they should leave Libya. And demonstrators are chanting that Libya belongs to Libyan. And I also know that Libya has been used to be a route of, smuggling of not only weapons, but also human trafficking, drugs, and also people who committed crimes and leaving Africa. They use Libya as a way to get to Europe. And it has caused a lot of problems because those who are not able to make it through in Mediterranean Sea, some they return and they end up engaging in illegal activities, because if somebody is looking already for opportunity and is traveling through a country and was not able to get to the other side, these people end up becoming criminals. Ladies end up being trafficked. Some they end up engaging in prostitution or become drug mules, and the country become chaotic, become Sodom and Gomorrah. But even the Libyans themselves, they are saying, no, people must go to their house. And the question is that why Africa is moving? Why can't we be at our home? Why can I not be happy being in Namibia? Why can I not be happy being in Namibia eating 3 days, three meals a day, going to a better school, and also have a future for my kids? Why should we be threatened by, squeezed opportunities? And who is going to create opportunities for us, especially in Africa? Because what we have seen, and maybe it will take us time to open our eyes, is that we had a lot of, or we still have a lot of developmental partners who have assisted us in planning our development. But look at where Africa is. Can we really give credit to them 80%, or they created the dependency that put us into chain? That's why the sons and daughters of Africa, they are living, and these people that are living, they are not adults, they are young people. If you look at what has been happening in South Africa, for example, these are not old people, these are young adults. These are young adults between the age of 30 and 45. These are the people who are looking for opportunities. That's why when the world is boasting, when Africa is boasting about having a young population, do you have a young population that you are taking care of, or you only have a young population in terms of number? But the young people are disorganized in Africa. Yeah, looking at statistics, particularly looking at what's happening in Libya, stated that As I indicated earlier, Libya is a key departure point for illegal migrants seeking to reach Europe by crossing the Mediterranean. As of mid-2024, the International Organization for Migration estimated that almost 1 million migrants and refugees were living in Libya. Many of them are Sudanese refugees who fled war. And it's not a good news, especially coming from Libya. Moving ahead. No, there is looking at Kenyan President William Ruto continued defending the Ebola quarantine facility for Americans. That is about 200 kilometers north of Nairobi, and it's been defending the quarantine. Because U.S. Spent millions of dollars building, quarantine facility, especially in Kenya, that is looking at accommodating of people that are coming from DRC, suspected of, Ebola. But it is stated that although American government has supported, President William Ruto of Kenya indicated that American government, they are good friends. And it's quoted here saying, American government supported us in Ebola setup infrastructure with a tune of, 1.8 billion Kenyan shillings. But seems like citizens are not happy because they were protesting. But Tate Ruto stated that, that is coming from a good friend. Let us look at this news. From there, we'll look at Cyril Ramaphosa address to the nation. And Cyril Ramaphosa continued to shock us because people thought he was going to address the nation regarding the palapala or regarding the way forward of impeachment. But it seems like he is not losing focus on his job as a president, but understand that he addressed the nation regarding illegal migration and anti-foreign protest. But let us look at President William Ruto and also what he has to say regarding a US Ebola Center.
The American government has supported us in this Ebola setup health infrastructure to the tune of 1.8 billion Kenya shillings. And they did make a request to us to, in the process of setting up all the other facilities, to also set up one where they can use in the event that their citizens, their soldiers, some of them in Kenya or from elsewhere, if they are in a situation, then they can use that facility. The American people and government have been partners with us on matters health for close to 25, 30 years, PEPFAR and all the other funds. American resources, American taxpayers' resources have been used to support Kenyan health infrastructure. It would be most unfortunate if on one request by the Americans to set up a facility at their cost, we would refuse. We would look very inhuman.
Yeah, That is what is happening. That is what's happening, especially with Kenya. The president is saying this side, saying this, and also the citizens are saying this, and everybody have their own reservation regarding, Ebola Center. You know, sometimes, you know, Africans, we are also at the point where we have suffered for so long. Even if you are coming with a genuine project, I have to question you, because the previous one did not work out for me. That's why I think that paranoia of being botched have caused a lot of problems, even missing opportunities, because, you know, if you have suffered enough, you may end up also missing opportunities. Even when a Western country proposes a real deal project to you, you look at this and say, what about this? Is it going to work? Why others did not work? That's why sometimes even, when somebody have suffered so much. You know, at one point, I was speaking with Dr. France and say, somebody who is abused becomes so timid. I said, becomes so timid and not able to take action when it's necessary. But that could also be one of the challenges that, it's becoming very difficult. Even when you see a real project, even if you see a real project, then it will not really materialize. That's why there's always skepticism about, new facility, particularly when things are related to health. Things are related to health. You really find out that, things become so difficult to accept. But that is what's happening. And while we are here, stated that on the business side, Aliko Dangote of Dangote Refinery. And we must always pray for Dangote. And we wish we have a lot of Africans who are like this man. Because beyond his wealth, he continue not only to navigate the globally competitive world, but he continue to prove to us that we can also not only lead ourselves, but we can tackle being an industry. Projects that are being handled, that are being done by Aliko Dangote, and also that are being done in Ethiopia there by Ethiopian government, those are things that should be appreciated. And if we have to benchmark, we have to go to Ethiopia, to go to Nigeria, we have to go to Uganda and learn the lesson that we want. It's stated that Nigerian, Dangote Refinery has reached a major milestone of, processing 700,000 barrels of crude oil per day during performance testing. And in that aspect, it has surpassed its, official target of 650,000 barrel capacity. And the refinery says it's planned to double output to 1.4 million barrels per day within the next 30 months, a move that could make one of the largest refining facilities in the world. Because if Aliko Dangote Refinery can beat the refineries in Russia, can beat the refinery in Iran, in Venezuela, in the U.S., and competing at the top one or top two and top five of refineries in the world, that should not only be something to celebrate, it should be a motivation to say, even Namibians, we can do it. Even Southern Africa can do it. Because the man by Aliko Dangote is very clear about bigger projects. And one thing that we must also embrace is that He also somebody that can be able to teach you about long-term planning. Not, tomorrow's victory, but he's somebody who look at the bigger picture. Because when he started his project, not even his own government did not believe him. His investors did not believe him. But he's somebody who has a vision. But looking at what the refinery is doing, I think that will be a game changer for Africa. And maybe it should also be our future plan to work with Dangote Refinery, particularly, you know, after we get our first oil. The question is that, is our first oil in order? Is our first oil in order? When are we getting our first oil? And how are the progress, particularly when it comes to oil and gas? And also one thing that we should put in mind is also that when you speak about that aspect of oil and gas, do we have our policies and laws in order? Or we are still debating? Or we are still looking at what we need to do? Especially moving ahead. And with Aliko Dangote, with Aliko Dangote, it's not only a pride of Africa, but it's also an indication to the world that we are also not easy. Once we are given opportunity, we can be able to do the work. We can be able to stand on our own, and that should be the future of Africa, especially when it comes to development. Yeah, moving ahead. It is stated that looking at Nigeria Army is making progress, especially restoring security. And it seems like Ahmed Bola Tinubu wants also something to show during the campaign, because he's showing his intention of 2027 election. Seems like he's taking his country back from the hands of the militia. Stated that Nigerian army freed 360 people that were abducted by Boko Haram. Stated that Nigerian army indicated that has communicated that the operation that took place in the Mandra Mountain, which is part of militia stronghold, has led to the rescuing of 360 people that were abducted by Boko Haram. And with the help of United States of America, it seems like Boko Haram is not resting anymore. They are running day and night. Seems like Nigeria is taking control of its country, especially in the head of the militia, which is actually a very good thing, because nobody wants to be led by the jihadist, because the jihadists, they are not only deadly, they are not governable, they are very difficult opponent too, because when they come to your doorstep, they don't leave you in good hands. And in May, Nigeria said the joint operation with US killed 175 fighters. But it's indicated that the insurgents, which has killed thousands of people and displaced millions, is still at large. But it seems like that is one of the progress that is done. Because we are saying Africa cannot integrate without security. You can't have a country which is economically competitive when it does not have security apparatus which are strong, capable, and protects its citizens. But that is one of the positive news, especially in the world of militia, because you know what Boko Haram can do. You know what jihadist can do. Because if you look at what they did in Mozambique, particularly in the area of Cabo Delgado, because It's not a good sign. It's not a good sign. But if you are defeated totally, if countries in Africa are well coordinated, then we are going to have a peaceful Africa. But the problematic part of security issue is that if you trace the weapons and ammunition, these are not weapons which are stolen. Not all the weapons, they come from Libya post 2011 war. Some of these weapons, some of these drones are being sold. Middle East countries too. There are reports that are indicating that Middle East countries are also selling drones and weapons, particularly to militia and fighters, either in the area of Sudan. But these are the countries that are having diplomatic missions in Africa. But at the back door, they are also hitting us by equipping jihadists, because who is trading with a jihadist, and how come they become so difficult to deal with in the long run? But yeah, the other news before we go to a short commercial break, this indicator that the military of Mali has offered 3.5 million reward for a jihadist leader. Mali military government has placed a multi-million dollar bounty on the head of one of the Sahel most wanted jihadist leaders. And the authorities are offering, 2 billion francs. That is about $3.5 million for information leading to the capture and killing of Yant A.G., Gali, this leader of jihad. It's one of the, one of the person that has been on the most wanted list. Many security agency, many international agencies. But you must also understand that in the world of underground, once you find a person on the list of the most wanted, but at some point you also find out that it's also a trading partners to some. You also find out that it's also a trading partners to some. Especially when it comes to weapons and many other things. So let us look at a short commercial break. From there, we look at South Africa. Then we look at the conversation for today, especially when you look at institutional strategic planning. So let's look at a short commercial break and come back shortly.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Wapubwa Eva Tere Ulikoni Maundu Tuto Ingida Ashike Kapeno Nweku Tite Opoye Ekukulile Oshafa Fana Nongeshefa Ili Mehola Mo Iho Etike Kovano Ile Koshuan Onongeshefa Yapumbwa Kukaraya Kovano Okupitira Mo Eagle FM Otuna Evi Tota Njuka Okukwetira Oipindi Konu Konda Doi Nawa Nune Udo Otukwetira O Special Getashia Kengeshefa Omarudi Dayo loka, okone ujendi fenawa, nokumona oijamo ili nawa, ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe, bali heali, nola natu, heali bali no heali, ileko berewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu watatu, oma felane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyzes issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. And looking at illegal immigrants. Looking at illegal immigrants and also South Africa. It is stated that, the president of South Africa, has addressed the issue of illegal immigration, especially that was associated with xenophobic attacks in South Africa. But for now, let's come back shortly to this aspect.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Yeah, let us look at what have happened, especially when it comes to South Africa. Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of South Africa, stated that only government can act on illegal immigration, because this also brought tensions. When you look at the decision of the government of Ghana, shows that they are not happy. Shows that they are not happy with what's happening with their people in South Africa. That's why they have created not only a fund to assist those who are coming back to their country, but they also came up with special assistance, particularly to the people of Ghana. And also other people. Last week you have seen around 5 people, that is from Mozambique, who were killed due to issues related to xenophobia. But there is a misunderstanding. Some politicians are saying it's a xenophobic attack. Some are saying it's not xenophobic. Some are saying, it's a lack of opportunities. But one thing that is an issue in Africa, it's an issue of people not being satisfied being in their own country. Not really to say people should not travel, but most of the people, they travel not for the sake of visiting, but they travel and overstay their welcome. Because how come people, when things get tougher, they run to their embassy and say, no, I also overstayed. I'm now in trouble. I want to go home. It's because people are not finding meaning in their own country. Should you blame them? To some extent. But who is supposed to make our country favorable if it's not us? But can you make your country favorable if there are no opportunities? which are absolutely not true. But how can we make sure that we don't find our country, not favorable? Then we find ourselves become slaves in other countries. Because now imagine somebody left the country for 5 years. Now he's running away, leaving all the properties that he started to build there, and coming and restart again. And that you are taking yourself again 6 years back, straight on 6 years back. And the question is that what happened to Namibians? There are indications to say Namibians are not really treated bad by what is happening in SA. But that should not be true, because it does mean that they are treated well. Because once you are in other people's country, you are still in other people's country. And once you are even there illegally, then it becomes a problem. But let us look at Cyril Ramaphosa. He's a guy who, whatever is happening, somebody that you can also learn from, to say a leader is somebody that whether there is chaos, he's always very calm and also doing his job until the day that the authority will catch up with him. We don't know if it's the High Court. We don't know if the Constitutional Court. We don't know if it's Parliamentary Impeachment Committee. But know that whatever is happening in South Africa, there is not only investigation, but there is a very strong accountability mechanism which is happening in South Africa. Either it's from Parliament, either it's from the court, but everybody is, looking at who, especially when it comes to accountability. Let's look at the address of Cyril Ramaphosa last night, and we come back shortly.
Over recent months, South Africans from every walk of life have raised concerns about migration and illegal immigration. These concerns are being expressed in our communities, our workplaces, our schools, our clinics, and across social media platforms. Many South Africans are asking difficult but legitimate questions. They are asking whether our borders are secure. They are concerned about jobs. South Africans are raising these matters because they are concerned about the pressure on our public services as well. They are concerned about safety, security, and the rule of law. These concerns are real. They deserve to be heard, and they deserved to be addressed. South Africans are asking whether government is taking the necessary steps to address these challenges. Tonight, I want to address these concerns. I want to explain what government is doing and is going to do to address them. And I want to outline the principles that must guide us as we confront this challenge together. We must be honest about the context in which these concerns arise. South Africa faces persistently high levels of unemployment, especially amongst our young people. Too many families are struggling to make ends meet. The cost of living is very high for many of the people of South Africa. Too many communities are experiencing poverty and inadequate access to opportunities. In such circumstances, frustration can easily be directed at those who are perceived to be competitors for jobs and resources. Yet, we must recognize that illegal immigration is not the cause of all our economic challenges. There are other causes. The answer must be faster economic growth, greater investment, industrial expansion, infrastructure development, and the creation of millions of new jobs. These are precisely the issues that our government is working on. We know that migration is a global issue. It affects many countries around the world. Our country, like many others throughout history, is a product of migration. It is the reason for our diversity and contributes to our vibrancy. As a democracy, we have welcomed visitors to our country in line with our international obligations on the issue of migration and our constitutional values. We accept people from other countries who are in need of protection from wars, conflicts, discrimination, and violence. Like every other country in the world, we have laws that determine who can come to our country, South Africa, and what they can do whilst they are here, and how long they can stay. Our laws are very clear on this. The basic principle on which we all agree is that every person within the borders of South Africa should be here legally, not illegally. Every person who works in our country must be legally permitted to work here. Every person who runs a business here must be legally permitted to run such a business. The challenge we have is that some people have migrated to our country irregularly and are here illegally. South Africa has a right to implement policies and measures that prevent irregular migration. Our country is committed to protect, uphold, and advance the human rights of all people in our country, whether they are citizens or foreign nationals. We are committed to honor our international obligations that deal with matters of migration. The responsibility for enforcing immigration laws rests with the state and the state alone. There have been weaknesses in the way migration has been managed in our country. There have been weaknesses in rigorous and focused enforcement. We admit that. And there have been weaknesses of corruption. There have been gaps in our systems that have undermined public confidence. South Africans are entitled to expect better. We accept that responsibility, and we are taking decisive action to correct these shortcomings. South Africans have a right to expect a state that is effective, professional, and capable of enforcing its laws. Government will accordingly take action to address the expectations of our people in dealing with the challenge of the violations of our immigration laws. I must make it clear that only the authorized government officials may act against violations of the law, including violations of our immigration laws.
Yeah, that is Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of South Africa. Very diplomatic, but what he's indicating is that it's only government officials that authorized can deal with those who are in violation of migration laws. But if you read between the lines, you must be able to understand that there is a message being given by South Africa that everybody is not reading. Even the leaders are not happy with people coming to their country. That's why when you look at the voices of political parties, political leaders in South Africa, it's a bit divided and a bit diplomatic and not harsh into those who are doing protest. Protest march to march, protest to Dodula. You understand that they are saying there is violation of their migration laws or immigration laws, which is an indication to say we don't want you into our country. In simple terms, it's only that people are so professional and diplomatic, but if you read between the lines, it's an indication that we do not want you in our country unless you have proper documents. What does that mean? It's a clear message to African leaders too, to say, let your people stay in your country because you are also dealing with our problems. So you can listen to that speech again and again. He may speak soft, but it's a message to everybody to say, yes, we understand the problems that is happening. But we don't allow anybody to come to South Africa when you don't have documents. And this is the same thing that was also happening among Namibians. And people don't speak about this. You have Namibians who go to UK, and there was a provision, because the Western, they have a different way of accepting or a different way of defining human rights. There was people who were saying, no, they are LGBTQ plus. Then they are being persecuted in Namibia. Then they got that opportunity to get into UK. And you find the person you are looking at him and say, no, is it really you? But you realize to say people are exploiting immigration laws to the extent of even changing themselves, or the extent of even laboring themselves so that they can be accepted just to leave your own country. But in simple terms, Cyril Ramaphosa is saying, stay in your country. You must go and watch that speech again and watch it again. He is saying, stay in your country unless you have documents. And although they are saying, no, we are not supporting citizens to take laws into their hands, the indication is that South Africa is also having crisis, although there are a lot of opportunities still in South Africa. And, you know, that's why even somebody who go to South Africa and start doing odd jobs, it become luxury for him. You know, somebody was asking me to say, you know, at that time when our friends from Zimbabwe were coming to Namibia, say, no, how come somebody come from Harare and end up, you know, or come from just Zimbabwe anyway, and end up doing better than me, who is here in Chivarongo, in Windhoek?
When it comes to managing your investments, should you rely on one expert or a team of specialists? With a multi-managed portfolio from Alex Forbes, your funds are guided by carefully selected investment experts working together to pursue more consistent outcomes. We pair the right managers behind the scenes so you don't have to manage multiple relationships. Strengthen your investment destination. Visit alexforbes.com today. Alex Forbes Namibia is registered and regulated by NAMFISA.
Somebody asked to say, how come somebody come from Zimbabwe and end up thriving here in Namibia? Because when you are coming from a difficult place, you see opportunities everywhere. Because you with a master's degree will not want to sell brooms. But somebody come from Zim with a master's degree and say, no, there's an opportunity here. I can make 500 in a day. I can pay my rent. I can also raise my family. Just walk around the town. I am also exercising at the same time. At the same time, I'm building a network. And to him, that is luxury. It's the same thing with somebody coming from here going to South Africa. Any job you can take, any money you can take, and with that aspect, you can also thrive according to you because you are coming from a difficult place. But in simple terms, Cyril is saying, stay in your lane. We also have our own problems. I'm not interpreting it for you. Go and read between the lines and know that people, it's not only that they do not want you, it's that they are also dealing with their own problems. You can't just visit the neighbor every day. Even in the Bible, it said you can't visit your neighbor every day. I don't know why, I cannot reference it properly, but I know is that the neighbor can also get tired of you. You can't just visit your neighbor every day. The same thing, that if the neighbors are cooking today, you are going there. Even tomorrow they are cooking, you are going there. No. In simple terms, they are saying, stay in your country. Let's deal with our problems in Namibia. Let's fight our problems. Let's deal with our unemployment issues. Let us, students deal with their NSFAF issue. Let us create our unemployment. And let us also trust in our people. Because that is the only way we are going to do it. Because if we are not, people are also getting tired of us. When they did not mention Namibia, don't say, you are not part of it, because when the law starts being enforced, we are also going to be impacted. Good morning.
Yes, I'm good.
Yes, how are you?
Yes, Joseph.
I'm well. How is the Monday?
Yeah.
How is the Monday?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
As long as we shut up,
no, we are moving. As long as we are moving.
Yeah, we must always appreciate life.
It's true. It's true.
In any circumstance.
It's true. Because other people are not even moving, you are even having a voice.
That's the point. At least if you have life and you have an opportunity to, you know, to just to put it right.
It's true, man.
Yeah, as long as you put a piece by piece, maybe one day it will come.
No, definitely. What do you have for us today?
No, just on the issue of the South Africans on a very big issue, man.
Yeah.
And the breaking speech. You know, yes, he is correct, but what the message the public is not getting, or what has been avoided from the public, is an element of a failed politician. Yeah? When they fail to govern, now they pitch, you know, people against each other while they are just there, you know, protecting their political career and something. That's where the problem is.
I also thought it that way to say somehow there is an involvement of politics there.
Yeah, because the politicians, they will always come try to give all the speech in that thing. And that is where, you know, I was not right. I prepared something like an article about it. I don't know. The thing is to say, you know, when Mohamed Mandani write, you know, a thesis article about about Rwanda genocide. When he said, when the victim become killers. You understand?
I hear you.
Then I had to say, look, also, you know, liberators also become perpetrators now.
No, you're correct. You're correct.
When you put that thing in the South African context,
yeah.
Now you would understand to say, back then, it was against colonialism, against apartheid. Now accountability must go to the politicians. You see?
Now
the politicians have turned the public against each other. You know?
It's a diversion.
You know, the victim themselves, the public, the public are the victim of the politician failed governance. You see? Now they are fighting each other. Why they are there protecting themselves to say as if they don't have any hand in that? It's time now for the public to see, to take accountability. That anger could be taken to the politicians, and the politicians are always to divert attention. You know,
but was it sponsored or what? Because I see even the energy that these people have and the reasoning, you can just see that.
Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
The everything is happened because of the public consent. You can only govern because if you have a public consent. That you see to say policy, defense, whatever you are going to say, all the laws is by consent of the public, because as a public we agree. That's why you can drive your car, there is nobody, and you stop in the robot because the robot are red. The consent. Because it's a law, it's a consent. We agree to it. Without whether you are there or not, we are supposed to. But the problem is when the politician fail to govern. People take the law into their own hand.
So this is not it's not it's a, it's a, you're saying it's a fail, it's a failure of politician to act on their promises. Then they find a way to divert.
Yes. what you don't want to hear is to say, when I said this is it's a failed government. It's a failure of the government here. Government failure here that you're talking about. Directly to the politician. That's why you cannot blame the public for taking the law in their own hand. Because the power belongs to them, the sovereign. You understand?
No, I hear you.
The
power
belongs to the sovereign, which is the public. Now you see, but there is a danger also when the public starting to take the law in their own hand. Because you are going to create a bad precedent about it. To say when things are not wrong, then you have a right. That's why you see nations move away from that. These things, some of these things are academic things. They are philosophical things for you to understand this topic. Because you know why nations are moving and some are still backward. It is because of those things. The reason why you see always to say, there are always schools in those African countries. Because it's those precedents that were created already, those years. Because they still believe, Kucha, no, if I have to disagree with you, then I have to go to work. I have to but in a constitutional democracy, you have to use a peaceful means to advocate change. That is what the rulers are saying. And we have to be careful about that. But there is that guy, Fulani, the leader of that. But the state is not arresting him. That's where the problem is.
It's true. No, it's true. And when somebody is speaking and he has more power, you can just see that the person is not alone. And even the way he's reasoning.
Let me tell you one thing.
Yeah.
The state cannot be undermined by any individual.
No, I hear you. But when you look at how political leaders react, they are not reacting the same.
You know the problem we have in the country is because in African countries, just not only South Africa, even in Namibia here, is because you want to, you are scared to act because you want to lose vote. Because you know, anybody, if the government took a decision against that Fulani guy, then the Zulu apparently they are not going to vote ANC. And who cares about the ANC?
and the Zulus are the kingmaker, they are a lot.
Let me tell you, that is the problem we have in Africa is to say, because even in Namibia here, we are trying to protect the political party, then the state, then the country. Now you have individuals who place themselves strategically in to capture state institutions so that the party can remain on the power. So that's why you see the party is more richer than the state. The party is not losing money, but the country is losing money. But the money has been lost through this corruption and other things, through these people that are caricatures. And the bad thing is to say, they even capture the state intelligence.
If
the intelligence of the country is being used to protect the party, then the state. That is the where the whole mathematics is.
Is it not independent?
Independent from what?
State intelligence, wherever they are, they always stay. Whatever happened, they are always independent.
Now, that's what I said, when they were vetting all those people, you know, in the 8th administration, you know, some people have questionable, you know, character.
They went through the net.
You see? If it was about state, how can they go through? But they have to label other people who has nothing to do with, you know, they have to label the other citizen as like apparently enemy of the state simply because they have a different opinion against the state government. That's why you say in South Africa they were supposed to arrest that guy and the cycle of that guy. They need to be arrested. But simply because you don't want apparently to lose Zulus, you know, voters, you let it go. Anyway, he came to the public side to talk. But these are the people who are who are killing people.
Okay, you know, okay.
Okay. Constitutional democracy.
Yeah. Later.
The rule of law must prevail. You understand?
No, I hear you. Let's look at it this way, to say, yes, South Africa, we can blame South Africa for whatever they do. But why are we running so fast from our own country? Can we also address that issue? Can African leaders also, apart from, because Ghana say no, my people must come. Other people, Namibia responded a bit late, but other people are still quiet. But can we also deal with our own issues at home before we come and fight?
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
This is a global village we are living in.
I know. Yeah.
It has been in the case.
Yeah.
All those ways.
Yeah.
This way, the globalization that you see, it has been already there.
Yeah.
But here, where we advocate for the free movement of water,
of people. Yeah.
And goods and the capital. That's why the reason why we are blaming, colonialists to say, look, they create a bantu system where they don't want people to move.
They create borders.
That was the issue. But here, we are saying people have the freedom to move wherever they want to move. What you need to do is to put your laws. But that's where the element of water, of failure, politician is coming in to say, what happened to the law that you put? Because the rule of law in a constitutional democracy is simple to say, look, if anybody breaks the law, let the law take its course. Not anybody to take his own law in your own hands.
No, it's a good argument. It's a good argument that I did not see that.
You see, if people are coming in, you have the immigration policy.
Why are you not acting?
Why you are not acting on the immigration policy? Why are you killing people? But that's why I said, South Africans, they are also, they're stupid. You know, the Bible says, they have to be told. The Bible says, that is Leviticus now.
Yeah.
You must treat, the foreigner in your land and respect them. Because you were also a foreigner in Nango wajon kuirongo. Umuno kusimanika kuirongo ya chinano wajia kuirongo mamavi. Land. When did they forget that? When did the South Africans forget that they were also foreigners? They were running away from apartheid and colonialism. Where did they go?
They were running away from Bota.
Shoshon wambo hati.
It's true.
You see?
It's true.
Do you think when they see now they're in their country, it will be like that again?
But I think it's a bigger picture thing. Some people, they look at the current problems. If you tell somebody who is looking for employment now for 5 years and say, no, David from this country is the one who is taking your job, they may likely to think that way and hate each other. That's why I think understanding also matters.
That's why from the beginning I said, what the public and the electorate need to understand is to understand the mind of the politician. That's how the politics works.
Okay.
Politics are about hiding the truth. But as when you are speaking, we are speaking from academic point of view. In academic, we have to set the truth from the fact. We talk the truth because we want the people to be liberated, not to be manipulated by the politicians. Because politicians, they always shift the brain. When we were in this country, when people were in a liberation struggle, they were fighting independence, inclusiveness, nobody's going to be poor, everything, what. When they take over, what they are saying now, they start blaming colonialism. But they forget that apartheid and colonialism, they use the state power to enrich them and also to exclude, from governance and economic activity. Now, when we take the power, what are we doing with the power that we fought for? We also continue with exclusion of the people from and exclude people.
Only the pattern change, my friend. Only the, you know, the tool change, but the mathematics remain the same.
Why is this now,
the power that inclusion, power that we have now in a constitutional democracy, cannot save everybody? Why are you not even protecting now the foreigners? Why are you not even now trying to liberate the people from poverty and those from settlement and also unemployment? But when is the public race? You are the one to first to run to them and try to push people against each other, so that you don't want people to blame you.
But don't we have good politics? Because politics is a system that has always been there. Don't we have a political system that can also serve the interest of people? We know not all politicians are the same. You can also agree with me that we have good politicians even in our country, right? Let's move from, can within the current political system, can we also deliver good things? Can we also deliver progress with what we have? Because it seems like when we look, even when I start reading and start seeing things, there's a lot of things which are not going well. But can we deliver good results?
Let me tell you one thing. Some people become politicians. But they don't understand state governance. That's why everything is about politics. But they overlook the fundamental, which is the state governance. You must understand how state works.
Yeah.
That's why there is a lot of, you know, that's why I said even now, you see, and you can also point this way. Why do we have a lot of advisors? You appoint a lot of advisors. But that discretion has been abused. If you see, to say, now you, for instance, you take Attorney General office, then you give it. That is an academic position. That is an academic person. Why do you need an advisor on top of the structure that is under him, that the person, all the deputy director and everything, and the EDA, all those people, they were meant, they are designed to advise.
Because are the first advisors not ministers?
To the president,
yeah. They are the principal advisors most. Then you have,
Then when you are saying, you have the position of IG, you appointed a person, which means if you have to give an advisor to that person, which means that person, the incumbent, is incapacity. It's like, it's no capacity. Now, why did why you have to bring us the person who does not have capacity, instead of just appointing the person who has capacity, who doesn't need any advice? If we are not saying people should not be given advice, because the structure of the any institution already, by design, those are advisors. Now, you have even the president still has to advise, to appoint apparently economic advisor. When you have the National Planning Commission head, you have the bank, the governor of the bank, you have the Minister of Finance.
I speak under correction. I think the Minister of Finance also has an advisor, because I remember that the Ipumbo had the economic advisor too at some point.
Let's be honest here. And we have to be frank with things. That's what I'm saying. I'm not a politician. Me, I'm an academic.
Yeah.
You understand?
I hear you.
I will tell you to say, look, you could, you know, AMSE, Minister of Finance or of Energy, is just a true journalist. Why you did not appoint an engineer to take over that ministry? Simple mathematics like that. Because, that's why we need to question the
But maybe it's leadership.
My friend, who said that person has no leadership? One who is born with a leadership?
No. There was an argument like that to say, why do you have somebody who has an MBA running? I want to bring that argument. I'm not disagreeing with you, I'm just giving a perspective to say, maybe that is where you say this person can have a good leadership, just need a technical person who can advise too.
But it's not entirely to say politicians can become just technical experts. Is that what you are saying?
My friend, some of our argument, we call them anything to power, one is zero. You know, because your argument is exactly when you said that. No, English is not the one. It's not that the one that you're going to do. But all the documents are in English. What mathematics are you telling me? When everything is in English, how will you No, you don't need an educated person because university is not, my friend. We are in the era of academic and all those books and all those and all those policies. They are in English.
I hear you. So what are you telling me? Are you saying it's a wrong choice or he can't do anything?
Let me tell you.
Yeah.
That's why when I push you to set governance and tell you when the president is given the power by the constitution to nominate people outside the parliament, the eight. Or ten of those eight people. Because the constitution empowers the president to take people with expertise who are not in parliament. You understand? You get me?
Well, I hear you.
But the problem is when you abuse that power to bring any person on the ticket of eight when that person has no capacity. Expertise that are needed. You see, expertise that are needed. And there where we are saying, can we really, because Article 18 said, look, you're supposed to act fairly and reasonable and what, the official.
Yeah.
We have to ask, is the president also, you know, liable to that? Is the president also an official of the state? Or organ of the state. Is that we need to challenge it on that ground? Because you cannot abuse the power like to bring somebody, or when you are given the power to appoint, you were supposed to appoint the competent people. You cannot appoint incompetent people, then you give them advisor. On top of that, they are also from retirement. What nonsense is that? You see?
So your view is that we're supposed to have an engineer. Well, what do you mean?
Look, I'm not saying you must bring an engineer. I'm saying bring in a competent person who does not need an advisor for retirement. Can't you not understand what I'm saying? And because the problem here, we are dealing with the successive plan, successive crisis in the country. You see? Successive crisis in the country. Because you say, no, the person has been there. He has had experience. He did not groom anybody. He never passed over the skill. Even on top of that, there's not even anything that he gives. Now he wants to still continue hanging on government job through advisors. This is what we are doing. Some people are so greedy in this country. You understand? Because when you are there, you are not grooming anybody. You want to keep everything to yourself. You are not teaching anybody. But when you left, you want to say, but nobody has the capacity. Because you are blocking everybody from gaining the knowledge. You keep everything to yourself. Now we have to extend your contract, and that is where the problem is in the public sector. We have to extend your contract, or you have to be brought back as a what? As an advisor. And I'm saying we are abusing that discretion power that have been given to us. You see?
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, we have spoken enough. No, I got what you are saying. I got what you are saying because my only, especially what I'm going to speak about today is the aspect of saying the result is what matters. At the end of the day, if we can be able to account, I'm with you. If we can be able to account to say after 5 years, if we can come and sit down and say, this is our NDP-6. This is our internal review. This is where we have done wrong and where we have done right. But if we can come back and we have NDP-7, then we are not doing justice to ourselves. Because at the end of the day, it's what we are able to do within this 5 years. Because 2026 is already out. I don't count it. But
I was very happy when I had to say no. or strategy plan has become now a political manifesto.
So what I wanted to say, because what made me to ask that question. There was, I think, on Friday we went to ECB and they presented this very beautiful. It's just a video of what they are going to achieve. They have already launched their strategic plan. Then I asked a question to say, when was the end of the previous strategic plan, and was it public when you guys did your strategic planning review? Because you cannot just tell me to say, I want to be a thriving institution by 2030, for example. I want to achieve this. But what did you achieve previously? Because we don't do that in Namibia. They just come up with another one.
Those are the issue. This is issue that you are saying. Let's give a chance. Let's do what. Because I'm saying, when they tell you, when you see a golden rule, we always call it a conventional wisdom. You will not change it to say anything. You already know the answer is zero. Because those people let me tell you, the people who have do research about that issue, they have already know. If you do this, if you just take an incompetent person or an illiterate person, then my friend, you are going to achieve nothing. You can say whatever you want to say, but the answer is the same. That's why you end up with all those mathematics. Now you are saying, look, at least, you know, it's always the same. You get the same result. Let's not...
But you know what? Why I don't want to draw conclusion about people. I look at qualifications of people. I look at what they do. But honestly, I don't want to draw a conclusion to say who is who. That is not me. You can say that is fine. But to me, I don't think people surprise you. Yeah. And I'm not waiting for that surprise. But
you need to understand one thing.
Yeah.
When we say illiterate, we are not referring to the person who doesn't know how to read and write, who doesn't have qualification or what. There are people, I was very convinced, I was in discussion with that guy. That guy, his specialization is totally far from governance.
Yeah.
But you cannot beat him in governance.
Uh-huh.
You understand? And that's what we say. There are people who have been taught, had qualification, but they still cannot reason. Because they were in a system of copy and paste. They were taught to use. They cannot reason. They memorize answers. That's why I said that if you take literary, no, you are going to get it wrong. But we are saying, taking a person without, you know, academic, because an academic person is a trainable, you understand? Even if it's not in the field. But if you take a person who is far from, you need a lot of advisors. But we are saying the formal structure of the institution, it's already advisory in nature. Because from the beginning up to there, the director, the executive director, the director, the deputy director, or the chief, all those people, they have a responsibility to advise who? The ED. Then ED take it to the minister. You know, the minister have to take it to the president. Now we are saying, why now you need an external, even somebody from retirement? You bring, was doing the same work, but you are still want to bring him an advisor. For what? And some of the ministers or ED or whatever, they are academic people. They are academic.
Yeah, they
we have to question their academic. To say, look, you say you're an academic.
Not some. I think almost all.
Look, our constitution. Me, I like our constitution very much.
Yeah.
At the beginning, I have some questions, but I said, there's nothing wrong with the constitution. Because you could understand the manner in the constitution was made. Because from, it was, the constitution came from during colonialism. There was not enough capacity. People did not, because you can even appoint some leaders, ministers, people who were just in the liberation struggle, they did not have time to go to school and what all those things. You see, it was good that you have to give them, you know, advisors, the people with the technical, you know, skill. But not now, when you have enough graduates, when you have, just take the person who is at the National Planning Commission, it's an academic person. Take the person who is the governor of the Bank of Namibia, it's an academic person. Take the Minister of Finance, it's an academic person. But why the person need that advisor now? On economy.
It's
an insult to the public.
Okay, let's give opportunity to others. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, we are moving forward. I want somebody to challenge the argument of Lazarus. I want somebody to challenge the argument of Lazarus. You know, you can come forth at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. We are saying we are here to educate one another. And if you agree, yes, you agree. You are quiet. But if you have something that can be able to teach us, you have a right to call in and educate us too. So that, you know, we can be able to, you know, to learn from you. Because nobody has a monopoly of knowledge. We're here to educate one another. Yes, Lazarus is a debater. But you can also come on board and bring your ideas so that we can learn one or two from you. Good morning.
Morning, David.
Yes, how are you?
Thank you always. How many millions are those ones for the capture or the information on this day?
Do you have him in your house? I think it's 3.5 million. It's the head of jihadists in Mali.
So now when the jihadists now captured, then the whole when he's captured now or killed.
No, I think the bounty is dead or alive. In most cases, he's dead or alive. Are you able to capture him?
Oh. Use some artificial intelligence and all these underground guys.
No, people must use technology to capture. I mean, honestly, I personally have a problem with jihadists because I don't understand their ideology. When they come to the place, it's just chaos.
Oh, my God. It is a mentality.
Yeah.
Before we finish time, actually, let's not, we can do it on that one so that we can start laughing.
Yeah.
But the issue, I see that, I do not understand now the difference.
Yeah.
That much. Maybe in their terms of reference.
In terms of what?
In terms of their function.
Which function?
But I see, when you talk about the politician.
Yeah.
This is parliamentarians and all these other things. And I've seen a lot of people who have got a master degree in different various professions. You have got lawyers there.
Yeah.
You have got all those people who are really merged into that, merged into those kind of professions, different various kind of professions.
Mm.
And those are the people who are cadets. Mm. Also, they have turned into politicians because of their functions.
Mm.
So now I sometimes I get confused because those people who are there in parliament, then the different branches, those various branches of the government, they are highly educated, careful people.
Yeah.
So maybe my understanding and what I'm always hearing is that they are just there, but they're not competent. They are perhaps just appointed. And I was even last time there was the late president, the Agagin Kop also.
Mm-hmm.
People were submitting their CVs
and
all these other things so that we can strategically position them, align them with their qualification, whatever they have, they are competent. And I do not, of course, you should have some kind of this technical skills, conceptual skill.
But my question is also that in leadership, do you need the technical skills or you need strategic skills?
Whether in leadership or... In fact, in leadership, that's where the emphasis of leadership style or the ethical leadership kind of style and all many other issues, that you are there to lead and influence and inspire and motivate all these people. So now you these are the people that we presume, and that is also true, that they have picked up a lot of skills, various skills, technical skills, of course. You have asked that question.
But do you know that you can have a PhD but you are not a leader. You can have a PhD in management, but you are not a leader.
Maybe you are not forgotten.
You are just a technical person.
You are not trained in some of this, because you know normally when you have those management and leadership programs or management programs, so they always go together. Because their functions, their responsibilities are also overlapping. But of course, you need to distinguish the differences there. But many a times, even the manager, they were also trained in leadership.
Because in most cases, we confuse academic excellence with leadership. To say you can have somebody who have a certificate in business management or a diploma in business management and somebody who has an MBA. But this one with a diploma is more experienced, can lead an institution. And there is somebody who has to go and look for a book. And because there is a lot of things involved. That's why you see it's quite very difficult. Because in most cases when people, and we are so blind, né? If I have a PhD in governance, for example, then I speak about something, you are most likely not to question me. I can also speak something which is wrong. Because if somebody with a PhD can also lie. Just because no, it's a doctor who said that. That's why we can drive into a drain, knowing exactly we are going to a drain, just because a doctor said that. Do you understand?
Obvious. Yeah. That's why people, there is this shared knowledge. Mm. People always engage, continuous training, continuous capacity building, and all these other things. So you always need some certain skills or some certain competency from other areas of profession. So what I'm saying, you are actually correct. It does not mean that, so they might have, especially when those people in carrying, you know how many programs that they go through when it comes to leadership? Constitutional training and all these laws, policies. They go a lot of training. And they have picked up a lot of experience because they are also their exposure to maybe a lot of things. So, of course, they are there. You see lawyers are in parliament. You see, that's why they debate this kind of public policies and all these laws. So there are people who are well equipped as well.
Yeah.
So of course they might also, like any other person, you might also have some weaknesses, like Ramaphosa is also talking about, the president Ramaphosa is talking about. There are weaknesses and all these things. And all these complaints, legitimate complaints and things like that. Obviously it also tells us, like you asked, what are the African leaders doing? We seriously need also to make sure that the security, the borders and all these things, people should flow within the parameter of the law. So it's very important that, of course, we don't just say, no, the politicians are just there, they are not trained, they are not well. They have a lot of degrees. See the people in parliament there.
Yeah.
LLBs and many other masters and all these other things. Some of them even have 3 masters. Or maybe how many degrees, like most of those people that have.
Indeed.
And they are lawyers. And they are politicians, isn't it?
All right.
So thank you very much, David.
All right, thank you. Good. Yeah. The conversation is what is important. And the main question that everybody should ask is that
can we review a document in public the same way we bring them in public? Because if we want to hold everybody accountable, let us do things fairly. Because if an institution stand up and say, we have this strategic plan, because a strategic plan of an organization is a map and overacting guideline on what an organization wants to achieve in the next 3 years or 5 years. And that document is well defined, and we have corporate people called corporate strategists or head of strategists that are championing those drafting of those documents. And it's what the management sell to the board. It's what the CEO sell to the board, and can also be approved. And what the board sell to the ministry. But in many cases in Namibia, and I see that from the media, you are invited to a launch of a plan. People are clapping hands. But people lessly speak about what happened, because in launching of this five-year plan, there was already another plan which happened 5 years ago. In most cases, after the end of every strategy, either it's done internally or they call a consultant, they review what happened, what they achieved, what they did not achieve. What they don't want to tell you is that they don't want to tell you what they did not achieve. The first time I have seen that is when ACC, review, and it was public presentation, review the National Anti-Corruption Strategy, where you see things and who did not do his job. Because if NIDA has a strategic plan, which is say we are creating 30,000 jobs, this is what we are going to do. Let's come 5 years and sit down to say, where are you? Because other than that, then the strategic plan of institutions become like political manifestos. Because citizens do not know that when your councillor comes to the end of his term, you can call him and call him to account to say, this is the video, you are speaking at this rally, come and show me things that you have done. This is the document that you have showed me, come and show me. Which is actually not wrong. Let's come back shortly and give the mic to the big mic.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25 Namibian. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99 Namibian. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99 Namibian. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99 Namibian. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99 Namibian. You Save. Where else?
Yeah, the time is 8 o'clock, and we're gonna give the mic to the big mic. That's a question we should ask ourselves, to say, if we are not sitting down after every term and look at the document and bring it to public too. Because if you invite me to the launch of a strategic plan, I have to ask you about the previous one. Why do you launch strategic plan publicly, then you review them internally? Because you don't want people to hold you accountable. And it ended up becoming like politics. It ended up becoming like politics. Imagine now we are going to have Namibia Air. After the disappearance of Air Namibia, we are now going to have Namibia Air. We know feasibility studies done, millions of dollars were cost. Now we are going to have Namibia Air. Let me say they come up with their strategic plan too. Can that be a normal thing to say? After 3 years, let's go and review. After 3 years, let's go and review. Because if we are not doing that, then there will be no difference between a corporate business, or it's called business integrated strategic plan, and the political manifesto. There will be no difference, because people get angry when you say, no, I have your manifesto here when you wanted to be a counselor. I have things that you said. Come sit down, chief, and speak to me. Where did you go wrong? What guarantee that do we have that we're going to give you another chance? Then people will start working, because if we are not asked, if we don't review, then we'll continue on autopiloting. But yeah, I'll leave in the good hands of the big mic. See you around. Sharp, sharp. and enjoy your week ahead. Bye-bye.